Might not suck so bad if you were still a Scientologist.
Welcome to Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. I'm your co-host, Bob Zarrell.
I mean, who wants to have sex with a guy named Bob?
Oh, Bob. Just doesn't sound right. Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Oh, Bob.
Bob.
Oh,
Bob.
Bob. Bob.
With me, as always, is professional film critic Sean Patrick.
I am the smart. I am the smart. S-M-R-T. I mean, S-M-A-R-R-T.
And Josh Adams.
And that's Jaime. Protege of mine. Ranked number 32 in the federal prison system.
32?
That's right.
Out of what, 20?
Visit us at ihatecritics.net, everyonesacriticpodcast.com. We're on Facebook and Twitter, Instagram. Our handle there is CriticsPod. That's where you can follow us, participate in our challenges, our top fives, whatever we're doing that week. This week, I think we're recasting a movie. What else do we got? Sean's reviews, interactions, podcasts there. Give us a like, follow us, whatever you do on those sites. Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, all your podcatchers. You can listen to us there. Subscribe to the show. Rate and review the show. We'll read your review on the air. And then Patreon is the best way to help support the podcast. ihatecritics.net/Patreon to become a supporter. Get yourself a credit on the show and some Everyone's a Critic podcast merch. And then our podcast merch store at our ihatecritics.net. And then there's a little link for our store there. It's through TeePublic. You can also go to teepublic.com and search for Everyone's a Critic Movie Review Podcast. We got three shirts up there right now. Our logo. I'm wearing one now. The Lord of the Fitbit. And then Everyone's a Critic and I Hate Critics. So if you want some merch, head over to ihatecritics.net and click on our link. It's also on our Facebook page and Twitter page as well. No news, no trailers. We're just jumping right into it this week. And the number one movie in America is Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse.
Yes, and this is amazing. I loved this. Spider-Man: Into the Spider-Verse is the Miles Morales story. Miles Morales has been a character in Marvel Comics for just a little while. He's one of the many versions of Spider-Man, and he's a great character. He's a really fascinating character. He's just this teenage kid who's mixed race. He's just very intelligent, and then he gets bitten by a radioactive spider while he's doing some art in under a subway and starts to develop his powers. He goes to seek out, I guess he's kind of drawn to Spider-Man via the Spidey sense, and he ends up meeting Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and stuff happens to where the Kingpin is creating a super collider that is bringing dimensions together. And in this big explosion, he brings together a number of different universes, which brings together a number of different versions of Spider-Man, including a brilliant noir Spider-Man voiced by Nicolas Cage. We've got a female Spider-Woman. We've got an anime Spider-Robot character. And we've got Spider-Pig, voiced by John Mulaney, which is absolutely just ingenious. At the center of it all is Miles Morales. And even with all this craziness going on, he remains the main character, your main focus. And because he's such a great character. He's such a sympathetic, empathetic character. He's learning to be a hero as we're watching it, and it's an origin story, but it never slows down for a moment to be an origin story. And that's what's really impressive, is they maintain the most ridiculous great pace in this movie. It does not slow down, and yet you're never exhausted by it. It doesn't make you feel tired watching it. It's just, it's at the perfect pitch for what this should be. And this movie is damn near perfect, honestly.
I'm 100% in agreement with you. This is one of the best animated films I've ever seen. And I am going to give a great deal of credit to the technical prowess of the film in general. How it looks. You've talked about before, we as a group have talked about how great animation can look and how it can seem to pop off of the screen, this is like the film manifestation of a comic book. And that's been uttered before, too, with certain films that it plays like a comic book. Or the 2003 Hulk was famously talked about because of its paneling. But at the same time, it never quite feels like that because they've still got to make it into a movie. This one, though, even the little crosses, when you look close at a comic book, how it's illustrated, it has a bit of a grain to it. In this movie, it's the same thing. And it literally is like reading it. And I felt like a kid again watching this. Spider-Man was probably the first or second superhero, depending on my memory and Superman and all that good stuff. It was those two that started my interest in all of those characters. And Spider-Man was always the one that I wasn't able to access through a movie. You know, it was always on a cartoon or in a comic book, or I had the ginormous coloring book, too. Watching this movie is like encountering that coloring book again. It's so well done, so you can forget about all of the stuff that might annoy you about movies. But because it's so well performed vocally and so well rendered, that it's... You're so right. It's damn near perfect. And I can't believe I'm saying that about an animated film, but at the end, there's such a satisfaction with not only how Spider-Man is done correctly, whichever version you're looking at, be it Miles Morales or the two versions of Peter Parker that they have in the film, everything is on point here, including Kingpin, which is a tough character to bring to anything because of his overstated size in the comic books, his menace. Like, he's a bad guy. We're talking about mafia dude here in the comics. He's really dark. Vincent D'Onofrio does a great job in Daredevil, but this adds another dimension to it that is even better in a way. So I can't say enough about this. I think it's one of the best movies of the year. I would watch this over and over and over again, probably better than anything that Marvel Studios put out for live action. That's a high bar. We know how much I love that stuff. So go ahead. Did you see it?
I did not get to see it. My son had a birthday party and we were going to see it. And then he kept saying, "No, I want to play Nerf Wars and blah, blah, blah." And then because he was having a friend spend the night, my daughter had a friend spend the night and she really wanted to go see it. So we were on our way to go see it and my daughter sabotaged. We went to Target before going to the movie. She purposely would not get out of the store on time for us to get to the movie. So we ended up, she didn't want to go. So we ended up not being able to go. It was pretty impressive. That's what she was trying to do. So it worked. And her friend was okay with it. They ended up watching like Ocean's 8 or something like that. I'm sure way worse than this. I don't know. But I wanted to see it and I did not get a chance to, but it's pretty cool. I mean, animated opening in December or something like that, which is pretty impressive. And usually movies like this, I wasn't quite calling it a throwaway, but a lot of times these animated movies that come to the theaters that have the live action stuff going on at the same time are usually throwaway movies, so it's pretty cool that this is not.
Yeah, because of its animated style and completely separate nature, I feel strongly that they were able to do whatever they wanted to do, and that kind of freedom it shows on screen. They aren't having to rely on Spider-Man fitting into a Thanos narrative or something like that. And in the Spider-Verse, you're just going to suspend disbelief for a little bit. You're not interested in figuring out the science about it, but it does just enough to make you think, okay, so there could be a Spider-Ham. You know, in John Mulaney, as I understand it, he's not a very good actor, but he's a wonderful comedian. And in this particular case, having seen all of John Mulaney's stand-up, he's the perfect choice for this role. It's a little sassy, a little snotty, uptight.
But still just, heroic.
Yes. this movie just hits all the right notes, and I left incredibly satisfied. That's just so rare at the theater.
The gags in this movie, they're spectacular. I mean, Nicolas Cage alone is just like a big gag in and of himself, the noir Spider-Man. But then you've got just wonderful humor just throughout. Jake Johnson is completely hysterical. One of the best pieces of voice work ever. He's just got the perfect approach to Peter Parker, the multiple versions of Peter Parker that he plays. And he plays kind of a fat, overweight Peter Parker in one of these versions, and it's just brilliant. I mean, he's just such a loser, but he's still Spider-Man, and he can still do Spider-Man stuff, and it's fucking perfect.
I respect that, man. Being able to be, like, overweight and think you're a superhero and get away with it, yeah, I relate.
There's a scene where they're trying to steal a computer that is just absolutely ingenious. And the coordination of it is like it's like part Looney Tunes and part superhero movie. It's wonderful.
So Nicolas Cage played both Superman and Spider-Man in animated movies this year.
You know what? I haven't seen the – oh, I did see Teen Titans Go. I was thinking about they're going to do the Superman the movie he was supposed to do, they're going to do that in animated form. And I was thinking about that for the future. But – In this case, you can tell how much fun he's having. When you see a Nicolas Cage performance that's dull and dreary, you can almost hear it in his voice that he's not having a lot of fun, no matter what kind of character he's playing. But if you watch Mandy, or if you listen to this, you can just sense that he's having a good time. And I don't know, this is the kind of Nicolas Cage that we like to see. It's tongue-in-cheek, but also... we liked him in many points, you know?
I feel like lately he's just been doing things that are fun. We just aren't seeing a lot of those movies because they're not coming to the theater. But you should, because they're very good, if you like that kind of thing. Anything else on Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse before we move on?
See it?
All right, speaking of seeing it, The Mule.
Oh, The Mule. Yeah, this is an utter disaster once again from Clint Eastwood. And granted, it's not as much of a disaster as 1517 to Paris, because that film had just no actors in it, you know. And it was, I guess, some people are kind of dismissing it as an experiment. So it's not really that bad. It's an experiment.
Whatever. Well, the script sucked
too. It's fucking
terrible.
This is terrible also. I don't understand what his approach is here. He's playing a guy. There's no real narrative here. I mean, obviously, you know what the narrative is from the trailer. He's an old guy who drives drugs back and forth for a cartel, but the way they play it, there's nothing really at stake for him, because he's 90 years old and he's got no fucks to give. He doesn't care if he gets killed. He doesn't care if he gets caught. So why the fuck should we invest in this at all? He has no interest in what he's doing. He has no moral quandary about what he's doing. So what the hell are we supposed to invest in here?
Are we talking about the director or the character?
Both. He plays a guy who has a flower plantation or whatever, and it's going under, and that's how he ends up where he ends up. He needs money, so he starts driving for them, but... The parts where he's playing early on, they do this like 10-year jump from him being, you know, being a successful flower guy and going to flower conventions, and there's this bizarre series of scenes where he's going to flower conventions and talking to his fellow flower people, and it is really a great deal like the flower shop scene from The Room. The random asides, the odd dialogue, the bad pacing, the weird just random non sequiturs that he spouts. It really, I felt like we were back in that San Francisco flower shop from The Room. Like, it's that level of bad. I'm not joking. And then from there, it's just, we see at least five, maybe six scenes of him in his truck driving and singing along to country songs and pop songs. That's like six different scenes of that.
How old were the pop songs?
Some were from the 50s, some were the 60s, 70s.
Kind of funny if he sang a modern one.
At least that would be a joke, but then are we supposed to laugh? Is this meant to be hilarious? I can't tell you if this was meant to be funny or not. His direction is so serious and so dramatic that if this was meant to be funny, I don't see it. I wasn't feeling it from what I was watching. The choices that he makes, he's got a thing for prostitutes. So he's like, he's just all bad, this guy. But he's also like, he's still grandpa. You know, he's still like the sweet, innocent grandpa who can't figure out how to text. Oh, I don't know how the texting on the phone works. I don't know how that works. And I'm also racist. I hate this movie.
Now he keeps having to throw that in his movies some too much.
And he doesn't get it. And, you know, you think for a moment that this is going to be about, like, perhaps he's going to examine privilege in this. Because who is the last person who's going to get caught driving back and forth with drugs in the back of their truck? But an old guy, old white guy in a truck is never getting pulled over. Like, literally, there are these scenes where he's singing along in his truck. He's not wearing a seatbelt. That's how comfortable he is in knowing that he's not going to get pulled over. And yet the movie has no interest in examining that privilege. It just completely ignores that.
Well, what was it, 10 years ago when he was talking to a chair? Or was it... I mean, that's...
Yeah, I think so. It was the 2008 campaign.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, he doesn't really care about privilege, I don't think. And, I mean, even...
But, I mean, don't you feel like that would have to come up? I mean, if just a rational thinking person that would have to come up in this?
No. I mean... Yes and no. I understand why you're saying that, but he is a very right-wing minded person, so yeah. He can be rational and not, you know, they don't like to accept privilege. They call it hard work.
Being very old and white is hard work.
That's what they call it. So... So, no, I'm not surprised he didn't address that. But I don't know. It feels like, you know, we were kind of excited about this movie. And then as it got closer, I don't know about you, Josh, but for me, it just kind of, it was there. But then I kind of forgot about it for a while. Then all of a sudden it was coming out this week. And I was like, all right, maybe I'll just try to sneak this one in. And then Sean shit on it in his review. So I'm like, I guess I'll just clean the garage. I've been avoiding that for a half a year since because of this podcast almost. Now I have a chance to do something for a day. But it just seemed like, I don't even feel like it's just for us. That I didn't see a lot of promotion for this. It just kind of seems like it kind of came out quietly.
Well, his audience turned out.
Really?
I mean, it made money. It made big money.
That's kind of what I was thinking, is that he's owed at least one or two slots during the year for the past decade, roughly, where he's just thrown something out there. And it seems like he's at least 10 to 20 million every time, which probably comes close to making money or breaking even.
And I honestly hope it's the case where he just doesn't care anymore. Like he's just, I'm at an age where I just want to go be where my friends are and just stay busy. I think that must be it, because he's not making movies anymore. He's not even bothering to put a movie together that makes any coherent sense. So maybe it's just, you know, grandpa's at home bored, and I need a reason to get out of the house. Let's go make another movie.
I mean, I guess it made $17 million on a $50 million budget, so I suppose that's a moderate success.
Yeah.
Not like the next movie.
Which is already on schedule to lose $100 million.
Oh, no. $100 million budget, 7.5 first week. Mortal Engines.
Yeah, that $100 million budget is also topped with a $40, $50 million ad campaign that they're never going to make back. So that's a bummer. The Mortal Engines is directed by Christian Rivers, not Peter Jackson. And I know there's a lot of people who are very confused about that, because they hung the entire marketing campaign on trying to convince you that Peter Jackson made this movie, and he didn't. But the entire marketing campaign is about it, because there are no stars in this. There is one recognizable face in this entire movie. It's Hugo Weaving, and that's it.
And he doesn't really have a recognizable face, because he's usually hiding his face, isn't he?
But you can look at him and go, that's right, Agent Smish. That's Agent Smish, right. You know?
Well, I couldn't do that, but I know what you're talking about.
But so the story goes that sometime in the past, there was this massive cataclysm. Cities rose back up by building themselves on top of giant wheels and moving around the earth. And the bigger cities feast upon the smaller cities to steal their resources. And we never learn why it's called the Mortal Engines. There's no mention of what the name means or anything. There's not even a fucking reference to any engines in the fucking movie. But nevertheless, this girl has, her mother was murdered by this guy, Valentine, played by Hugo Weaving, and she's now found herself a way to get onto the London, whatever you call it, I don't the moving continent of London, to get a shot at him. And she actually gets on there and is able to stab him, but then she's stopped by this guy, Tom, a historian, who just sees a girl with trying to stab a guy he knows, so he just tries to stop her. She tells him that the reason she did it was that Valentine killed her mother, and then he tells Valentine, "Well, she said that you killed her mother," so he kicks him off of London. She's already off of London, so now they're together and wandering the wilderness and trying to stay alive and get back to London so they can stop them from blowing something up. There is one thing, the biggest mistake this movie made, because it's not a badly made movie. Like, the CGI is well done, and the actors are all committed, even though you have no idea who any of them are. And this director keeps revealing them as if it's supposed to be important to you. Like, he reveals the characters. Like, they do the thing where they take off the mask and you're supposed to be, like, surprised. And it's like, yeah. I have no idea who this person is.
It's supposed to be, like, John Stamos right? Instead. It's
some guy. It's
Ben Mendelsohn.
And I'm looking him up. I'm looking him up online. Like, these aren't even popular, like, TV actors that I'm just not aware of. These are, like, foreign actors for the most part. Like, nobody knows who these people are. And he keeps revealing them. It's ridiculous, but there is one thing that in this movie that, and the biggest sin this movie creates, is that they make a movie within this movie that is so much better than this movie. There's a character called Shrike, who is what they call one of the resurrected. And he's a guy who years ago was a warrior. He gave up his soul and kind of his body and became kind of a robot with kind of a vague human memory. And when the lead character, the girl, is 8 years old, and after her mother has been killed, this guy takes her in, and she kind of sparks that last little bit of humanity in him. And so he raises her, essentially. And then she makes a promise to him that she doesn't keep, so she can go kill Valentine, and he set off. He's going to kill her. And he becomes this, like, he's like this steampunk Terminator character now who's just raging through the movie, killing hundreds of people, but he is amazing. It's an amazing creation. I want to watch this movie. They keep these little flashbacks of them together, her growing up, him raising her while still, like, always holding over her that he's going to kill her. And it's wonderful, the dynamic between these two characters. And I'm just wishing I could watch that movie. And then it's not there anymore, and I'm like, there's still another hour to go.
They ran out of money.
That would be a great movie. This is a subpar. I mean, it's not terrible, but it's. I've already forgotten most of it. As I'm saying it, it's just kind of leaving my brain and won't come back again.
It's really unfortunate, but almost kind of expected based on what we had seen on screen, despite the big idea, that concept. And I know this is from a book, as I understand it. So weird titles like that, I kind of get it, even though they don't explain it. I'm sure it's somewhere, somewhere in one of the sequel books or something, they explain what that means. But visually, it sounds like an interesting dynamic where you've got massive cities crashing into each other. What's the science behind that? You're saying big wheels. I'm like, but how do they even install them?
And see, there's no interest in telling you that.
That would be the main thing I would focus on is does this even happen?
Not to mention the fact that I've seen the entire movie and I don't know what a mortal engine is.
Curious idea, poorly executed.
Absolutely. And from a business standpoint, I don't understand what it was that they thought they were making. Like, I don't understand what they thought the hook was going to be. I know Peter Jackson is a big star director, but you can't pretend that he's directed this movie and have that and expect people to turn out. We're dumb, but we're not that dumb.
Even if he had directed this, there's no way they turn out with this. I mean, I don't think his name's enough to bring someone to this unless that book had that big of a fan base, which clearly it did not.
No. I mean, I go back to it all the time about I think movie stars are important. I do. I think having a movie star, having a recognizable face, having these people who are proven commodities, who people go to the movies to see, matter. And this movie probably wouldn't work under most any circumstances. But you give me somebody that at least I recognize, you've got a better chance than you've got hiring some girl from Iceland who she's nice, but she's not special. And the guy that got to go with her, English Justin Long, he's not even as good as Justin Long. I would love to have seen Justin Long in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, movie stars are important to an extent. I kind of think characters you know that are universally known are what really matter. If you're going to have a $100 million movie, I mean, you really have to.
Ian McKellen and Viggo Mortensen and Elijah Wood were people you knew. Sean Astin were people you knew going into Lord of the Rings. Still a bit risky. None of them a star that had proven they could carry a box office, but you recognized those faces when you saw them, and it mattered. It made a difference.
Well, it was a different time, too. And you also have obviously Mortal Engines was a book, but Lord of the Rings is a bigger book. So that I think that was the most important thing there. And I don't know. It's just... But you're right. I mean, movie stars do matter. And I think Peter Jackson directing would have been a little bit more successful. But still, I don't know how, unless you get some huge buzz going about this, how this makes its money back. Who thought this was a good idea from the
industry? I'm assuming maybe Mortal Engines is huge in Europe. I don't know.
I suppose we'll find out, I guess. But although if you already know it's going to lose $100 million.
That's what I heard, yeah, on Twitter.
Then it's probably not huge in Europe.
That's a big sum of money to lose. I mean, that's Jupiter Ascending style loss.
Have they worked since then?
They've done Sense8 on Netflix, but and that doesn't exist anymore. They did like a movie for Netflix, but as I understand it, they closed up their shop in Chicago, and they have nothing on the horizon at the moment.
Before we move on to our catching up series, which we'll do after the classic, because I think Once Upon a Deadpool came out and I saw The Hate U Give, and we'll get to those in a little bit. But our classic to go along with Mortal Engines, only because of the Peter Jackson references, Lord of the Rings, Return of the King.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the main event for the linear, legitimate, and universally recognized Undisputed
Classic.
I'll start.
Just because this is going to be a long night for you. Go ahead.
It's not going to be that long.
I've come to peace with all
of this. We've done it twice. The same thing as one of the other times.
I just finished watching this roughly 8 p.m. tonight. So, you know, about a half hour, 45 minutes before we start recording.
So you started about 8 a.m. this morning?
I left that one right on the tee for you.
That was good. And he was late, just so you guys know. I was.
Okay, so... It's the third book. Some of the things from other parts of other books make it into this movie, whatever. It's the same thing. You're starting out with what is going to result in a large battle in Mordor at the Gondor, the White City. You know, Frodo and Sam are going to get to Mount Doom. Okay. The early part of the film really focuses on Sméagol and Gollum and how there really isn't any coming back from his character. You know, there's no redemption available for him, and the film makes that clear. Spends a little bit of time with the three of those at the beginning, but then we start to see the clear indication that despite the victory at Helm's Deep in the Two Towers, you've still got to battle the 10,000 orcs coming out of Mordor. You've still got to clear a path so that Frodo and Sam can keep the Eye of Sauron off of them and more on the battles. There's really not a whole lot to update unless you're talking about the end of the film, because this is really a continuation of the Two Towers. There's a lot of battles. It's culminating here. Okay. And Frodo and Sam keep walking. Now, I'm selling it short just so that we can get onto the parts that matter to me about this movie. As a moviegoer that's more of a fan, that's been very clear. I have no education on the school of film, anything like that. I've relied more on the feelings and emotions of a film more than the technical prowess or the stage presence of actors or the dialogue or scripting. And I care about those things, and I see them, and I recognize them when they happen. L.A. Confidential is coming to mind. David Mamet films. Everything that I see, I still get. Like, I like independent films. It's not like I'm a big blockbuster guy solely. It just happens to be what I'm most interested in. This one is the complete amalgamation of every single thing that I've liked about movies over the years. Characters that I really care about. Cool special effects, and this one does it better than most, to be honest. In watching it again, I still feel that way. I don't think that there's anything bad about this, and it was amazing when I saw it. Music, I care about that so much, and Howard Shore's score for this entire trilogy, specifically this movie, is just great. It hits me in all of the right places. Maybe it's too easy, I don't know, but I love it. I love its rousing nature. And this story, like, we keep waiting for a payoff, right? And when I saw this for the first time, I'd never read the books. I don't know how it's going to end. I had only heard somewhere that Frodo lives was something that my mom used to write on her notebooks and stuff when she was in junior high. Like, that's, it had a big a resurgence in the 60s, as I understand. So I didn't know what was coming. And to watch it end like it did, okay, the resolution of the story, okay, not the ending of the movie, but the resolution of the story, was very impactful for me. Aragorn looking all emotional and looking back at the screen and saying, "For Frodo," and the music rising up at that moment. At the time, there were people standing up in the theater and cheering and clapping at that moment, and I almost did, except for my reservations, right? Because that's like a... that's a great moment. It's so cool and nerdy and brave, and it really just got me going, you know? And very few things at the theater do that, so I've got to give it credit. Then when they finally toss the ring in there and everything just collapses and everyone's got this shocked look in their face, everyone actor-wise is on board in this movie. We've heard about how they worked well as a group, but everyone sells, like, all of their emotions in this. I bought all of it because we've been with these guys for 13 hours, okay? So it works for me. Some of the darker elements, like crazy Denethor trying to burn him and his son alive because he's lost his mind and he thinks that the world is lost anyways, so he might as well just take it down with him. The mouth of Sauron, which you guys probably didn't see because you didn't watch the extended edition. It's a really gross, gross scene. Bruce Spence, the character actor, has a really gnarly mouth, and they make it all up to make it seem just monstrous. And the final ending, okay, because there are many of them, obviously, and it should have cut out at least one of them. At least one. Okay, don't go back to the Shire. If you're going to have all of those endings, make the last scene Sam going back into his house instead of going back to the Shire. Then, oh, I'm feeling a little lonely, blah, blah, blah. But it hits all of the notes for me. And that's the only way that I can defend the movie other than technical aspects of it, special effects, you know, blah, blah, blah. Saying it won Best Picture doesn't work anymore. It used to be something I would argue with friends about. That doesn't matter. I understand that now. But it does mean that I don't like a piece of garbage film that nobody likes, right? It does mean that it was popular enough, successful enough, that people said, let's throw you a bone, instead of Lost in Translation, which probably should have won that year. I just love this movie. It hits me in a particular place. When I saw it, and then the whole idea about Frodo going into the West, the Grey Havens, the letting go of your mortal life. At that time, I was still ruminating the loss of my father from just a couple months before, and I felt like he would have really loved this movie, and never admitted it, of course, because he never showed any kind of emotion, but he loved Annie Lennox, and Annie Lennox has got the final credits song. It's very personal, this particular experience, and so it's hard to justify that it's a great movie, but for me, again today, it did its job.
I
it's funny because I feel like you're the majority here. This is, I don't know. Do you have to defend this movie a lot?
To friends prior to this show, yeah, I would have to say, like, well, yeah, because it was my favorite movie for over a decade.
But you're defending it as, like, comparing it to, like, all the other great movies. It's not like...
Yeah, it's kind of like how I used to tell my friend Megan, who's a big Beatles fan. She would say, the Beatles is the best band ever. And I was like, Journey's the best band ever. And then, of course, there's nothing to really back this up with. It's just a feeling and an opinion. So,
it's Lord of the Rings is Journey. I can go with that.
That's not a bad comparison. It's all anthemic in emotions and feelings and hooks, and not necessarily character studies per se.
All right, Sean.
I mean, there isn't much for me to say here. I just don't connect with it the way you do. I just don't. And it's all the computer generated stuff. It's really impressive computer generated stuff, but it just doesn't do anything for me. It's mostly seamless, but it just feels so inhuman. It feels so put together, and I prefer the shaggier sort of kind of movie, like Lebowski, which is a movie that's, you know, loose and jangly, and you can, you know, it feels real in a weird way, and yet it's not. I don't know. I just like more human, recognizable characters, and I didn't connect with these particular characters on that level. It's a masterful work of, you know, CGI and special effects, but I don't care.
Yeah, I think that's more where I'm at. I guess there's two ways of looking at it. While I'm watching it, you know, you look at the CGI and you look at all the shitty movies that have been inspired by this movie. Reminds me of part of why I never liked Star Wars. Having never seen Star Wars, but all these shitty movies that are clearly influenced by Star Wars. And you start holding that against the original piece of art. But at the same time, it's not a bad movie. I have a hard time feeling that way, period, about movies in general. I mean, you know, even Rocky, I like for just, I don't know, it's not, it doesn't make me feel as good as this makes Josh feel. Or a lot of things make a lot of fans feel. And I've talked about that on the podcast multiple times, but I just don't, nothing really grabs me like that. So at some point, I'm just kind of like, all right, let's get on, let's get moving. But I understand the fan base. They want to watch, you know, 15, 16, 17 hours of this.
Yeah, 4 hours. 4 hours of in 20-some minutes of the movie today.
Right. Whew. But they eat it up. They don't want it to end. They just want it to keep going. So that says something. That means something. And I get that completely. I just, you know, I'm sitting there. It already felt long, and when it ends, quote unquote, and then I just pause it because my wife had just gotten home and she's like, why are you watching this? I'm like, because it's our classic this week. And I hit pause and I just looked up at the thing and there was half an hour left. I'm like, there's a lot of CGI, maybe it's really long credits. That's kind of what I was hoping.
And it is, but
but then when like Frodo and what's Gandalf are like smiling at each other for what seems like forever. Oh, God.
Yes.
And again, at that point,
I thought my DVD had skipped, honestly.
I wish my DVD had skipped. It's just one of those where now I'm completely taken out of it and I'm just getting through the end. You know, it's kind of, you know, you're running a marathon and you just got to finish that last mile. It's kind of what it. And so I could not enjoy anything good that was there. It was just kind of, I'm getting through this now. So if there's something there, I apologize, but it was, my mentality was like, I just need to finish this and be done.
I do think that there's something there. And
well, it sounds like it from what you were saying earlier.
Yeah, it's just a matter of choosing the right ending. And I feel like it's hard for Peter Jackson to have probably sat there and after the battle is won and the ring is tossed into Mount Doom, it's over, and they've been picked up and put in bed and blah, blah, blah. Okay, so that should end it right there, right? But that seems so quick after you've just been through 12 hours of journeying. There should be a bit of an arc as to where you get to his final destination, because you want to see him go into the West. Like, in theory, that's his death, so to speak. Okay, we have to get there, though. How does he get there? And it's hard to combine all that stuff where you've got a clear ending of end of the war, but then also the end of Frodo's life. It's a whole other story, and he uses four different endings to tell it. And that's unfortunate, but almost, like, hard to not have there. I was thinking about our attitudes as filmgoers in 2001, 2, and 3, and how time can be unkind to your memory. And I was worried about that actually happening this time. Just far enough away from the last time that I watched it, probably 6 years ago, and how I would feel as somebody that has, like, a preteen now, and all the other things that I've seen as a result of this show, and how it's narrowed my mind just a little bit. That didn't happen to me, but I can see where if you were coming to this for the first time and you're used to cinema over the past 10 years, then this is not going to work for you. I really think you had to be wrapped up in that moment, and you've kept your nostalgia similar to how Star Wars is. There's a reason why there's a comparison there.
Well, and I think the way Lord of the Rings was viewed at the time, and nobody really wanted to say it, but I think now you can say it, and it's true, is that it was the comfort food of the moment post 9/11. Hmm. This is a way to watch something and completely not have to invest in it. You don't have to worry. You get 3 straight hours where you can just stare straight ahead and just let it wash over you.
You're literally going to another world.
Right, exactly. And I think that certainly plays a role in the nostalgia surrounding this one. And you know what says what else says something about the quality of this movie is that I think this is so much better and more memorable than Avatar. The comparison, I don't think even Avatar even comes close to this movie, honestly. Even this, as much as I don't care for this, it's way better than that. And it's more memorable, and it's stuck around longer and will probably stick around longer.
Yeah, I think it's mainly a result of how they developed these characters. Whether or not it needed to do all that they did to develop them, you've been through them with them for a long time. So you care about them, obviously, a whole lot more than you ever cared about Sam Worthington or Sigourney Weaver or the blue people.
Well, right. I mean, this is – I'm just not into it. It's not that it's bad. It's I'm not into it. Yeah. Avatar's bad.
And we're not into it. Whatever mythology that film developed, it didn't work because it had been done before.
But I almost disagree. I was into the special effects. The world is neat. You know, when you're seeing it in theater, I get it. But when you sit and you, as you're enjoying the world, once you've kind of get used to that, you're kind of like, well, this is really stupid. this isn't creative. This is, you know, for someone who's been working on this forever, as this is how Josh and I first started talking was this movie. Yeah. He literally just takes the Iraq War and retells it in this stupid movie. And we're just like, you didn't try that hard.
No. Unobtainium is oil.
And unfortunately, because of unobtainium, I can never remember. What is it? Vibranium? Is that the Captain America?
That's yeah. Yeah.
I always want to call it unobtainium.
And then there's Wolverine's, which is adamantium. So
the next Avatar is going to be hard to get him. Hard to get him.
I don't know how I'll know. I will not see it.
Unfortunately, it's not going to fail. As much as I want to say it is, I guess this whole Disney thing is. They're doing a...
Oh, that's right.
People love Avatar. We're in the minority again.
Oh, it's a corporation. It's like banking, honestly. Avatar is like banking. It's too big to fail. It's one of the... Like, the government's going to prop up Avatar when it gets here.
And we're doing our best to regulate it.
Not only that, it's the plot of Avatar 2.
It's a bad subprime loan. Avatar is the housing bubble.
Oh, my gosh, yeah.
People are so dumb.
No one knew it was bad until it shows up.
But even then, half the people are like, yeah, it's not that bad.
Yep.
They start blaming the wrong people. Okay. Instead of a top five, we decided to recast Lord of the Rings, or at least four of the characters. We got a little bit of participation, although somehow, happened to me too, they just disappeared on our Facebook page. It got buried.
Yeah.
Weird.
And I don't know how, you found it. Weird
Facebook algorithm or something.
Yeah, you had to pull up in photos, but then even then I couldn't pin it to the top of the page. It was weird. I had a hard time finding it, as did Josh. But Jason from New Mexico and Sarah found it, so I'll read Sarah's. She said, I think I'm losing my mind, but let's all try to picture this. Fraser Crane is Frodo. Niles Crane is Sam. Martin Crane, who is the dad, as Gandalf. With a special guest appearance by Ted Danson as Sam Malone as Aragorn.
Long flowing locks.
Yeah. Jason from New Mexico said, I'll give it a try even though I haven't seen more than a few minutes of the movies. I'm only using the active roster or this would take too long.
Didn't we say don't do this?
You told me if I did it, I had to make sure they were in movies. He had Gollum as Daniel Bryan. Frodo was Bailey. Gandalf as Shane McMahon. And if anyone knows what WWE stands for, Aragorn is Elias. I switched mine a couple of times, but I've settled on Frodo as Scarlett Johansson because I want people to be upset because she's playing a little person. Sam is Amy Adams just because I like Amy Adams. I don't know. Gandalf is Jimmy Page. If anybody's seen the, what's that movie? The Song Remains the Same. Yeah. And then Viggo Mortensen is Mel Gibson from Braveheart because he kind of has a Braveheart scene. Yeah, absolutely. That was when I wrote this top five, was when he was doing the riding the horses around.
You know, when that was happening in the movie, too, the first time I saw it, I said, oh, it's his Braveheart moment. And I was getting very apprehensive about how it was going to sound because he doesn't have the same commanding personality as Mel Gibson. And I'm like, okay, well, all the right words were said, but it still wasn't great. Then he looks back at the camera and I'm like, all right, I'm cool.
What was the other thing is while I'm watching this, I'm picturing that, you know, the old racist driver from
Green Room. Green Book.
Because
different old racist driver in Green Room.
This is a movie I didn't know Viggo Mortensen before Lord of the Rings. Yeah. So I always knew him as a long-haired, cool, rockstar-looking guy. But now that I've seen him since then, you know, I can totally see the aging, overweight guy in Aragorn. Which made it weird.
Yeah.
But I guess Russell Crowe's kind of a similar thing.
You got to give Aragorn a break. He's like a couple hundred years old. So, you know, he's been given extended long life by the elves. Anyways, that's enough of that crap. Yes, please.
So I could not bring myself to take this seriously. I don't know why. So I would try and do a serious list with an actual actors, and I just kept coming back to Joe Madden as Gandalf, Rizzo and Bryant as nice. Frodo and Sam, and John Lester as Aragorn.
Okay, I like that very much. No Rossi? No? Oh, God.
Those are Cubs players for you, for you movie geeks.
I thought I'd do an Ivy Envy themed.
Legolas is most definitely Albert Almora, right? They kind of have a little bit of a similar look to him. All right. By the way, speaking of the Fraser and Niles thing, there was a crane on the side of the road coming back today, and I looked at it and I said, Fraser! And my car mate didn't really care for that one. But I said it because Sarah had this in my head. All right. So there's no need to really recast this for me because I'm fine with who it is. But if I had to, I am, when I'm reading books, always cast the roles. And so if I had taken myself back to, you know, who would I have wanted if it had been me reading the book first? Okay. Frodo, Lucas Hedges. He's been around a lot. I could see him pulling that kind of thing off. Him or Sam, for that matter. Joseph Gordon-Levitt or Cody Smith-McPhee. Any guys that have elvish, otherworldly looks to them as well would work for me. Sam, I thought of Patrick Fugit immediately for some reason. I don't know why, but it seems like he would be the patient dude that would coax the lead, the emotional, unbalanced lead, to like come back down to earth a little bit. I don't know why. It's his calm nature, I think. Him or Kieran Culkin. I think it's because I watched Home Alone as well this weekend. Anyways, or Jemaine Clement. Now, it turns out Jemaine Clement and Brett McKenzie of Flight of the Conchords were actually people that were fan cast into this as well, because I saw that on the internet. For Gandalf, Sam Neill or Rutger Hauer. Turns out Sam Neill was up for the role, and he had already taken a role in Jurassic Park 3, so he couldn't do it. Worked out pretty well for us. In Aragorn, Russell Crowe or Daniel Day-Lewis, which apparently both of them were on the list. Now, Scout's Honor, however I do that. I'm not really a Boy Scout, but I did think of all of these before I watched the internet. And the only congruence, really, is that I picked people that were either British or Australian or Kiwi anyways. And so that's what they really tried to cast in
Mel
this
Gibson.
In these roles anyways. And I originally thought of Jake Gyllenhaal for Frodo at some point. And then I read that he auditioned for this and was the worst audition he'd had in his career.
Got his ass kicked by Elijah Wood in acting.
Yeah. Peter Jackson said it was the worst audition he'd ever seen. And obviously Jake Gyllenhaal is one of our better actors, so it just goes to show.
Elijah Wood's that much better.
Maybe Elijah Wood would have been Donnie Darko, you know, instead. I don't know.
All right. And then we'll do a little catch-up. They released a new Deadpool movie, kind of. Once Upon a Deadpool. What'd you think?
Well, there's about 20 to 25 minutes of new stuff in the movie, and it really revolves around Fred Savage and Ryan Reynolds pulling off this Princess Bride thing, and that's good stuff. It really is. There's a whole scene that made me uncomfortable because I took three kids with. It was harrowing at times, okay, just wondering. There's no F-bombs in the movie, but there's a scene with Fred Savage that's really brilliant because Fred Savage says, oh, Matt Damon was there? And he says, I really want to, like, fight Matt Damon. And Deadpool has this little bleeper out, right? And so he's bleeping it every time that Fred Savage says fight. And it makes it seem like he's saying, I want to fuck Matt Damon. And it becomes so clear, even with his mouth movements, that it's clearly fuck instead of fight. And you've got these kids over here, and I'm looking at them. They're laughing their butts off sheepishly, right? Because they know what's going on. They're not dumb, but I do like the creativity there, how they get around the rated R thing based on a technicality. I mean, that's really good stuff. For the most part, it's the same film. They don't do anything different with the ending, except for perhaps the end credits. And the Celine Dion song at the beginning of Deadpool 2 is not here. They just tag it on at the very end of the credits. So it's fun. I wouldn't call it worth the price of admission, per se. But it would have probably been a lot better for me to check this out, you know, when it comes out on Blu-ray or whatever.
Did they dial down the violence at all?
Yes, of course. I was thinking about that in the first 5 minutes of the movie when he ran into that warehouse with all of the gangsters and blew their faces off and right. Everything like that. No blood. Same shots, right? No blood. So that's somehow how they get away from it, which is
movie.
It's a complete cop-out. I mean, to have the same violence there, but then just don't show the blood is a complete cop-out.
What did Deadpool do to Ryan Reynolds at the end, or did they leave that out?
Blew his face off. Yeah, I made him stay to the very, very end because they have a Stan Lee tribute at the very end. But yeah, they have the scene with Hugh Jackman in there and Deadpool blowing away other Deadpool. And then Ryan Reynolds, oh, this is great, with the Green Lantern script, blow his brains out. But instead of blood all over the script, it's just a bullet hole. So again, the MPAA is so full of shit. I would love to have them in the room explaining their bullshit.
But that's pretty funny, though.
It's very funny. And I love the spirit of Ryan Reynolds and everyone, Fred Savage included, trying to give just a big middle finger to everybody that doesn't know where to set a standard.
So basically, we should take our kids to Deadpool in the theater, rated R, is what this is kind of getting at.
In a way, yeah. There's no F-bombs or anything, but they tell you in the movie, we're allowed 3 shits and 1 F-bomb, and then they have like 7 shits and no F-bombs. There must be some magic combination.
You mentioned Stan Lee. I forgot to mention that during the Into the Spider-Verse. That is an emotional moment.
Absolutely it is. It's one of the best parts of the movie.
Yeah, I legitimately was choked up during the Stan Lee cameo in Into the Spider-Verse. Yeah. It is very moving. And it's an actual moment, too, where he gets to say something.
Yeah, it's part of the film. It's not just a cameo.
Yeah.
Oh, did he like know he was going or something like that? Or
No, but
the context is such where you could take it like that.
Yeah, it's really moving.
Oh, that worked out nice. And I don't have much to add, but I saw The Hate U Give, and everything Sean said on the show is pretty much... I mean, you kind of know the movie without seeing it. They don't take a side. They just kind of show it down the middle, and it's a hell of a movie everybody should watch, and I think it's not preaching to one side or the other, so I think both sides could get something out of it. I suppose both sides could also roll their eyes at it too, but it's a pretty good movie that I think a lot of people should see. At the same time, this time of the year during awards season, it's hard to take a movie like that against some of the other movies I have been watching, and you know, it's not going to be a top five movie for me. Anything else before we move on to 88? All right, 1988.
Number 18 in 1988. Squeezed and pulled and hurt my neck in 1988.
Squeezed and pulled and hurt your neck in 1988.
The big movie for the week in terms of prestige, I suppose, because it won Best Picture for this year, is Rain Man, directed by Barry Levinson, Tom Cruise, Dustin Hoffman. Everyone knows... if you're a movie fan at all, except for maybe younger viewers, you'd know what this movie's about. We had it as a classic last year on the show. I can't remember for which particular movie. It might have been for The Mummy. It might have been for something
different. I think it probably was for The Mummy. Thinking of movie stars.
And so we shouldn't spend a whole lot of time on Rain Man because we hashed that out quite a bit. And we knew where we stood. We came to a consensus that we were not in consensus.
Two out of the three of us like it.
I think it's a piece of shit.
And going back to it, I didn't watch it this week. Not much of a need to, but I still think there are touching moments individually where you can sense that the film's trying to do something serious. And then also there are other times where it's a little too dramatic. It's a little dated as well.
A lot of saccharine nonsense.
That too. I didn't get to see any of the 88 movies this week, but the one that I'm most interested in because notoriety is a fun movie would be Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. Steve Martin and Michael Caine, two ne'er-do-wells, but they're wealthy and so they do mean things to people. It sounds maybe like a fun idea as long as it's not mean-spirited, so please tell me more. Uh-oh.
not a favorite of mine, yeah. There's a lot of really annoying stuff in this movie, lots of annoying bits. But the thing that has stuck with me for 30 years of this movie is this bit that Steve Martin does where he's trying to play a small child. And like he and Michael Caine are trying to convince this woman that he's a child, and I guess she's like so they just say he's, you know, really mentally challenged, and he does this whole routine where he's playing a mentally challenged character, and it's really it was hard to watch in 88. Imagine trying to watch it now.
It's
really awful.
It reminds me of your thoughts on a particular scene in Roxanne from 87, in which he was doing something that just seemed totally out of left field with the ladies and having sex with aliens.
Yeah,
that reminds me of the same reaction that you had. But I still want to see it basically because I do like both of the actors, even though they've clearly made bad choices.
Well, I can see a movie like that. You know, a lot of the movies he doesn't like, you know, like Christmas Vacation, I could see it kind of falling in that kind of...
if it was that good, man.
I don't know if it's that good, but I feel like, you know, I could see why he might not like it because it seems similar to that.
Sure, sophomoric and mean-spirited at times, right. I see. The other ones I have forgotten because they're not in front of me.
In a way, I'm going to get you, sucker. Might be the best one on the list. That movie is hilarious.
Which one?
I'm going to get you, sucker.
Oh, yeah. That movie is great. So the idea here is this is a parody of blaxploitation mm-hmm. movies. It's got some actual blaxploitation guys who are actually in the movie, but the idea here is that there's too much gold on the streets. The guys have gotten so many gold chains that they literally are dying from being over-golded. And into this comes Keenan Ivory Wayans, whose brother has just died from wearing too many gold chains. And okay, he sets out after Mr. Big, John Vernon, brilliant casting, because he actually played a character like this back in the 70s. And he's the one who's sending all this gold out into the streets. And basically, it's just a lot of really stupid violence and a lot of, like, but it's all blaxploitation stuff, but with, like, Naked Gun gags. It's really... really good. I mean, just the number of times that Damon Wayans goes down a flight of stairs is just... two ways out of here.
Is this the movie where Chris Rock crested by one rib?
One rib! that has stuck with me for years. It is so funny. How much for a sip?
Can you break 100?
Hammer and Slammer, Isaac Hayes and Jim Brown. Fantastic.
I know a little bit about Keenan Ivory Wayans in his directing style because, if I'm not mistaken, he directed Don't Be a Menace to South Central while drinking Juice in the Hood.
Yeah, that's one of the lesser ones.
Okay, but I like that enough to quote it from time to time because of the various characters in it.
They also did the original Scary Movie.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Which is the only one that's worth watching.
I would agree with you on that one, having watched four or five of them.
No, but you'll like this one. I'm going to get you, sucker. That's hilarious.
I know Jason was mentioning that if there's one that I watch this week, it should be that. And yeah, of course.
It's on Prime, too. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. If you had time.
Well, so if you get more. Possible Oscar-contending films for this year, or I'm going to get you, sucker.
It'll last longer. You'll remember. It depends on the Oscar-winning movie or nominated movie.
Sure, yeah. Sure.
But I definitely recommend it at some point because you will enjoy it. And then the last two, Torch Song Trilogy.
Yeah, that's the Harvey Fierstein. I got the right guy? Yeah.
Yep.
He had a Broadway play called Torch Song Trilogy, if I'm not mistaken, and that's brought to the screen here, and it's really kind of like a loose biography, I think, of his life, if I'm not mistaken.
I've not seen it, so.
Yeah, okay.
And my handwriting is poor, but The Courier.
Oh, The Courier. This is a movie that made like less than $500,000 at the theater, but it has Gabriel Byrne in it, and for whatever reason, if he's in something, I want to see it.
Play the devil.
Again?
I'm asking.
Okay. Yeah, he's either a devil or the priest in like the late 90s. End of Days, Stigmata, yeah.
But yeah, that's our show. That's all the movies we're going to talk about next week. It's fully loaded. Mary Poppins, whatever that's being called. Aquaman, Bumblebee, Second Act, and maybe Welcome to Marwen and They Shall Not Grow Old. Possibly, what was that Beale Street movie might come to?
Beale Street Can Talk. So, one of the best movies of the year.
So it's going to be a jam-packed show next week as well. So we're going to have Mary Poppins be our classic, because why not? If the sequel's coming out, we might as well talk about it. And our challenge or top five category, whatever it's going to be, is sequels that are better than the original. I don't really necessarily have to do a top five on that, but if you have a couple that you want to
choose
list.
Choose one and fight for it.
Oh, choose one. Oh, okay. Okay. Maybe I won't choose that one then.
It doesn't have to be the best one. Just pick one and fight for it, yeah. Especially if you think you're in the minority, like if you have Caddyshack 2 or something like that.
Or if you had like...
If you've got Caddyshack 2, you might want to get yourself checked into a hospital somewhere.
I know somebody who liked Caddyshack 2 better than Caddyshack.
I remember you said that when I turned 30.
A cousin of mine. So that's our... That's next week's show. I do want to thank our Patreon supporters for we end the show. Up here are Key Grip Levels, Jason Bryant and Charlie Messing.
and then another.
Her character actors, Cousin Jeff, Christina Cato, and Josh Paul.
I think this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship.
Our special effects level, Sarah Ward and Corey from IVNV.
May the Force be with you.
Our associate producer is Jason from New Mexico.
Everybody has to eat shaving cream once in a while.
And our movie stars are Uncle Jeff and Dave Sievers.
I want the truth! You can't handle the truth!
If you want to be a Patreon supporter, head over to ihatecritics.net/Patreon to get yourself a credit on the show and join a tier, and there's merch along that goes along with it. And if you want to buy our merch, ihatecritics.net, there is a podcast merch tab you click on, and sends you over to tpublic.com. And if you just go to tpublic.com, search for our name, and you'll find us there as well. Is there anything else I am forgetting before we end the show? All right. Well, tell your friends about us. Rate and view the show. Subscribe on wherever you listen to us, and we'll see you next week.
That ought to do it. Thanks very much, Ray.
And we're the three best friends that anybody could have. We're the three best friends that anyone could have. We're the three best friends that anyone can have. And we'll never, ever, 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 ever leave each other. We're the best three friends that anybody could have. I mean, the three best friends that anybody could have. That's right, the three best friends that
anyone... Social Network or Babe?
Social Network.
Babe.
It's a Social Network. Donnie Darko or Juno?
Juno.
Donnie Darko?
Juno. Robin Hood 73 or Total Recall? The original Total Recall. Versus the original cartoon Robin Hood. Or do you want more of a challenge? I can get rid of it. Let's see what we can go against Total Recall.
This is fascinating, gentlemen. What the heck is this? What are they doing?
It's a ladder match.
So this is all it is? Like, they do this from time to time? This isn't a one-time thing?
Yeah. Sometimes they use ladders and tables and chairs and kendo sticks.
That's the name of the pay-per-view.
Tell me more about this character that's dressed like Harley Quinn. I want to know more.
Asuka?
Asuka?
She's beautiful.
Yeah. See, if you guys put this on from time to time when we're recording, I might get into wrestling a little bit more.
This is a
main
event. Girls on the main event of a wrestling show. It's insane, huh? Yes Man or Secret Window?
Ooh, that's tough. I like both of those movies, but I'm going to go Secret Window.
As will I.
Me too. I guess I like them all okay. AI or The Prestige?
AI.
Me too.
The Prestige. Monty Python and the Meaning of Life. Singing in the Rain.
Singing in the Rain.
Agreed.
Tremors. Bicentennial Man.
Tremors?
I still haven't seen Bicentennial Man, but I have no interest.
Oh, what a piece of shit.
Tremors, there are seven of them.
Yes. Uncle Jeff figured out that there had been six Tremors sequels. I'm sorry you had to find that out.
I enjoyed Tremors okay.
Yeah, the original is kind of interesting. Man.
The Mummy, 1999, or Good Will Hunting?
Good Will Hunting.
Agreed.
Super 8 or The Host?
Super 8.
Super 8.
Fargo or Grease?
Fargo.
Fargo.
Sure.
Oh, man, I went to a wedding last night, right? So you hear all of the traditional wedding music.
Yeah. Rice, baby. Yeah.
Oh, you know, it's funny because they do that at weddings, like hashtag whatever. And so I'm like, oh, that's interesting. Let me see how many other pictures came from that. No, it was just Beth. That's it. Two things that she posted. Very active wedding.
Oh, they were trying to get you to hashtag rice, baby.
No, apparently, that's just like a modern thing. Now, I will have you know, that will not happen in a couple of weeks.
You're all invited.
I went to a wedding once where the DJ didn't have any licensed music, so he had basically like the Full House version of every song ever made. It was so
John
bad.
Stamos.
It was so terrible.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Well, needless to say, they're
Kids Bop Lynyrd Skynyrd is not fun.
Oh god. Wow. There will be no Grease there. No Grease medley like I heard last night. I really hate that stupid movie.
You are having karaoke. What if someone wants to sing it?
That's a no. That's why the invitation was put out with, if you want to send in your karaoke request for consideration.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah. Yeah. We got a couple of requests in already. I know what I'm going to do. It's all good.
What about the Beatles? Is that a big no?
No, you can do the Beatles. As long as it's not one of the 10 no-no songs. I don't have
a no-no song. There's a 10 no-no song.
just you're not allowed to pick a Journey song because he gets all of those.
I can't hit those notes, man. I've tried.
Nobody can.
Right. Well, apparently Steve Perry and one Asian guy.
Yeah. Well, yep. they had to tag out. He had to pass the baton. Steve Perry can't hit the notes anymore. From what I understand. So back to your
neither can Peter Jackson. It all comes around.
Back to the wedding you were at.
Yeah. Yeah.
Did they play like forever the Jesse and the Rippers version?
What?
Or the Beatles, or the Beach Boys version?
It was not the Beach Boys, I can tell you that.
Huh. Like the one hit song from Full House. You don't remember that?
Oh, the one that, okay, Jesse and the Rippers. I'm like, that's got to be a band I've not heard of before. No, now I remember. I forget Jesse was an aspiring musician and jingle writer.
The Goonies or Miss Congeniality?
Miss Congeniality.
The Goonies, but barely.
Yeah, I'll go with nostalgia. Dogma or Alien versus Predator?
Dogma.
Dogma.
In Good Company or The Fountain?
I'm tempted to use my fishing with Gandhi. Yeah, I'm going to use my fishing with Gandhi on that one.
I like In Good Company enough. I appreciate it for getting me into Peter Gabriel more.
Okay.
It Salisbury Hill was in it, and I'd never heard that song before. And
then
so
it ended
I was like,
up being in everything.
Yes.
That's the weird thing. That is a song that once you hear it one time, you never don't hear it again.
That is absolutely right.
I'll just go fishing with Gani so you can have that. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets or Remember the Titans?
Harry Potter.
Yes. Harry Potter.
Wow.
Forgot to hit. Yeah, sorry, we shouldn't be watching wrestling while we record, but that looked painful. Garden State or Starship Troopers?
Garden State.
Garden State.
It's one of those Star Wars-inspired movies that pissed me off. Armageddon or Mars Attacks?
Oh, I used my fishing with Gandhi way too early. Mars Attacks.
Yeah, Mars Attacks for me.
I don't have a preference either, but I guess I'll go Armageddon. Alien or Inspector Gadget?
Alien.
Alien!
I just clicked Inspector Gadget. I'm so sorry. I didn't mean to do that.
You would.
Betrayer.
How do you get it back? Oh, I can't have it back. It's all gone forever.
Alien's now in the thousands somewhere.
Twilight or The Negotiator?
Negotiator.
Which Twilight are we talking about here?
Not the one with Reese Witherspoon.
Okay. The Negotiator.
Which I'm surprised anybody remembers that one anyway.
Oh, I actually kind of like it. It's not great.
I mean, it's Negotiator's really watchable.
Oh, yeah. F. Gary Gray's a solid director at times.
Who Framed Roger Rabbit or Talladega Nights?
Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
Agreed.
Lincoln or Happy Gilmore?
Lincoln.
Lincoln.
Oh, come on.
I thought that movie was going to be a lot of homework, and it's
all right.
It's really great.
But speaking of, you called Deadpool being creative with saying F-bombs and bleeping it out. Happy Gilmore did it first.
Yeah.
Finding Neverland or Lucky Number 11?
Ooh, those are two really good movies. I'm going to go 11.
As will I.
Yeah, that was a fun movie. Full Metal Jacket or Babe?
Oh, Full Metal Jacket. Sorry, I wasn't.
No, I know. I know how much Josh loves Babe, so it's always fun when two movies Josh likes.
public on this show that Babe is in the top 50. Full Metal Jacket is not. So there you have it.
Full Metal Jacket. The usual suspects are the producers.
Which producers?
2005.
Usual Suspects.
Agreed.
Shrek the Third or Eagle Eye?
Shrek?
Yeah, I haven't seen Eagle Eye.
I'll go Shrek. Donnie Darko or Pokemon the movie?
Donnie Darko.
No, you're not going to get away that easy. You know,
oh, that's a trailer that I saw this week. Detective Pikachu. Saw the trailer for that. I have no interest in Pokemon at all. Like, I've tried to listen to kids say names of Pokemon, and
yeah.
I mean, that's when you find something sharp and stab yourself in the ear. But Detective Pikachu kind of looks fun. Ryan Reynolds is the voice of something is interesting. It's a segue to Orko, so you can play Orko for me, you know?
Last of the Mohicans or Pearl Harbor?
Last of the Mohicans.
Yeah, Pearl Harbor sucks.
Amen.
Is that Ronda Rousey?
Yeah, that's Ronda Rousey.
She's been here for
what
a year.
What the hell?
Yeah, she's the WWE Women's Champion.
Is this legal? Are we rebroadcasting? Kick ass or Coyote Ugly?
Kick ass.
Yeah, kick ass.
I guess Becky's
if it were kick ass too, I would say no.
Is it going to be a triple threat at WrestleMania now? Cannibal Holocaust or Natural Born Killers?
Cannibal Holocaust.
Cannibal Holocaust. It's an interesting matchup there.
Yeah. But, I mean, there was no contest for me.
No, not at all.
There's a lot of... I would be surprised the number of movies I could pick Cannibal Holocaust over.
Yeah.
Actually. That movie actually gets better for me.
I wouldn't mind watching it again, oddly
really?
Enough.
I'm saying, yeah.
It's a lot of fun.
Feel-good movie of the year.